Channel 2 over. I'm setting it up for Mr. Eastman this Monday, right after lunch, the 7th of June, 1971. Channel 2 over. Channel 2 over. And I'm setting it up for Mr. Eastman. He's come up again to see that pump. Same old symptom. The 7th of June, Monday the 7th of June, 1971.
Gotta tie a knot.
Yeah.
Just sit down there. Oh, just a simple thing of tying a knot.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes, sir. Well, they didn't. That wasn't tied right.
Well, you see, they had that just stuck through the weight and the knot tied the end of it.
Yeah.
Well, the way to tie them is put that through there and you bring it up over.
Yeah.
Then you take and bring that right around once, or when you come back down, it comes right back down in on top of that weight. See, so that the weight holds your knot, tight.
Well, I didn't quite see that, Mr. Eastman. I thought what you were going to say is that if you just got one piece holding that knot, it'll wear it out. There's one of them things.
You got a little piece of string, I'm sure.
How about here it is? Yeah, I got the thing.
That's interesting, though. And then that just pulls down and holds that knot.
Yeah, well, now your thing comes down like this.
Yeah.
Like that.
And it's got a hole in the end of it.
Well, then you take and bring this right around.
Yeah.
See? Like that.
Yeah.
And instead of coming through there with it, you come right around again and through there.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Yeah.
When that comes down in there, see?
Yeah.
When that pulls up, now the Boy Scouts will tell you what kind of a knot that is.
Uh-huh.
You see that pulls right down in there?
Yeah.
And it pulls in so that your weight comes right against your string.
Yeah.
So it's firm.
Yeah.
And that had just come untied.
No.
No. Your thing is broken too up there.
Yeah.
But the way that they had it, you see, they had it just stuck through there.
Yeah.
And then they had a knot like this tied in it.
Yeah.
See?
Oh, yes.
So that come back against it, of course, that's where it was smaller, you know.
Yeah.
It just come back and it was just riding just like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
See?
Oh, yes. How's that doing? Well, look, now these two springs is out of one of these chairs. See there? There's three springs in it, and two of them broke right at the same time. And we're just setting in them over there. Now, you know, you could take a tour of Lachua County, and you'd never find a spring to suit. They either be too weak or too strong.
Well, that's just what I was going to say. I've got some springs just about that size, but I don't think they're quite as strong as that.
Yeah.
Now, and there's absolutely no way to hook on here. And you see, it goes around a little easy. It just hooks around a little rod down there.
Yeah.
You can put it through there easy enough. But nothing will hold it. You put wire there, and the wire won't hold it long.
No.
It.
Well, now I've got some of them springs that come out of a bed.
Yeah.
So whether they're quite as strong as that, I don't know.
See, that thing is as stiff as it can be. Yeah, that thing is mean. You know what? I learned right smart, Mr. Eastman, from dealing with this fellow Kaiser, who's got that office equipment place in Gainesville. He goes to fire sales, things like that, and he had a little new stuff. He had a bunch of these, and I bought these from him for $10. And then he had the regular big type of swivel thing. And I bought a couple of them from him for $10. Well, you know what happened to that big one. The roller down there, the caster, wouldn't stay in. And it had already been hollowed out, and some carpenter's glue put in there.
Yeah.
And I drilled another place and put it in. And nothing would ever make it stay that I could do. Now, you see, you get one of those things and you think, well, that's just as good as new. Well, it is, except you can't get along very good on three casters, okay. Mr. Eastman. If it tips over, one of them going to fall out.
What, it got metal on the bottom like that, or wood?
Well, I've thrown them away now. They had wood. Wood. Yeah. Well, I guess the new ones are metal. Now, I never had trouble with these casters. This is the first trouble with them I ever had. So they was worth $10, I guess. But you know, you buy an old one for $10 and you can buy a new one for $40. If it lasts you a couple of years, that's still a pretty high price, ain't it? When it's supposed to last a lifetime, you might say.
Well,
never way out, really.
They wouldn't last a lifetime. If they had, the fellow wouldn't sold it to you.
I guess they were fairly antique. Mr. Eastman, let me tell you what. I want to call that hardware store.
Let me tell you.
Faye, I told Faye this, but I couldn't make it convincing. Over there at Johnny Palmer's house where you was, and a little girl comes scooting in there and caught you down there on the floor doing something and wanted to know what the hell you was doing there. Now, that what her mama said to explain to you, I thought that was as rich as anything I've heard, Mr. Eastman.
Yes, it was.
Yes, sir. I couldn't tell, Faye. I didn't get a straight tell,
Faye. Well, I says to her, the mother, I says, how come you have to work? Well, she says, I'll tell you. It takes all the money that he can earn to pay the rent and keep us in groceries and clothes and make the payments on three automobiles.
Yeah.
See? Well, I said, there's three automobiles. I said, you don't have to have three automobiles. I said, if you didn't work, you wouldn't have to have only one. Well, she says, he has to have one, and I have to have one, and the girl has to have one to drive school. Well, I said, with a school bus going right by the house, well, she don't have to have no car to drive to school. Oh, she says, she's too good riding a school bus.
Why, Miss Eason.
Yeah. And she says it takes all the money that he can earn to keep that much up. And she says it takes all the money that I can earn to keep us in liquor and cigarettes. Well, I said, didn't you know that them are two things you could get along without? She said, not my family, she says. Look at here. And she opened up the refrigerator door. And here set a plate in there, a little platter. And it had a ham on it that was, well, probably 3/4 cut off, you know. See, I suppose they baked the ham and then cut it off, you know, for sandwiches or boiled the ham. I don't know which she did do. And they'd cut it off, see, for sandwiches there, and there was just about 3/4 of that gone. And there was a couple other little dishes about that big that had some leftovers that sat in there. And the rest of that refrigerator was all full of beer. And there was one bottle of wine and one bottle of whiskey in there.
What,
Mr. Eastman? Yes, well, that's the way a lot of them people live.
Yeah. Johnny Palmer know about that?
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
It wouldn't make any difference as long as they paid their rent. But they're not there now. They're not in that house now. I don't know where they went. They went somewhere else. And to go back to that same outfit, as he was telling about me being on the floor and the girl coming home, what prompted me to say anything to her in the beginning? My truck sat right back of the house, see? Well, the kids come home from school. There was three little kids come home, and they put their dinner pails in there and some books in on the table. And away they went. And I didn't see no more of them. I don't know where they went. They were just gone. Well, then in about a half an hour, the car pulled up in front, and this girl jumped out and started running to the house, and the fella got out from the other side, and he come in there, you know. He catched up with her, and Jesus, they were loving one another, coming along up, you know, and they opened up the door. She seen me, you know, and she stopped back. She said, "What are you doing in here?" Well, I said, "Can't you see? I'm putting a new floor in here." She turned around to the fella, and she said, "You get back in the car. We'll go someplace else." So, Jesus, he turned around and went back to the car. She come in, took her school clothes off, and got on a little pair of shorts and not much of else. Much of anything else, and she took off and went out in the car, and away they went, see. Well, then, along about a half an hour after that, the old lady come home.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Geez, and then I had another funny one over there. I was over there working to a place for one of Johnny's houses, and the girl come home from school. She come on the bus, come home from school. She come in, and she went in, and she talked to her mother. And, oh, she was the happiest thing around there, you know. She was a humming and a singing and a kind of a dancing around there. Pretty soon her father come home with the car. And she run out, and she throw her arms around his neck, you know. She says, "Daddy," she says, "I got to have a car to drive to school." He said, "What?" She says, "I'm taking up driver training down to school, and I got to have a car to drive." Why, he says, "We can't afford two cars." And he says, "I have to have this car to drive to work." Well, I said, "I got to have a car to drive to school, take up driver training." Well, then he said, "If you got to have a car to take up driver's training," he said, "you just quit it." Boo-hoo! She says, "No, boy," she bellowed, "you could hurt her half a mile, you know." She run into her mother, and she was a boo and boo and boo and boo. The old lady said, "Now, honey, quit your crying, and Mom will see what she can do for you." Well, just about that time, I'd like to have been in the old man's pants. By Jesus, boy, I'd have peeled her right to the bare hide, and I'd have spanked her bare behind. Don't think I wouldn't. By Jesus, after the old man had made the decision, you know, that they couldn't afford two cars.
Yeah.
Then have the woman butt in, "Now, honey, your Mom will see what she can do." My old man ought to had her, boy. He'd have pounded hell out of her. Jesus, he would. And I figured that she deserved it. By Jesus, a woman that'll come right in and butt right in like that.
Miss Eastman, I don't believe Lois Dixon, I don't believe she gets into things like that. You see, you are out where you see those things.
Yeah.
And she sees...
Well, what do you suppose Lois Dixon would say if I told her some of that? I bet her face is getting redder but Jesus in that bowl.
Oh, me. Well, she thinks everything is just pretty.
I wouldn't dare talk like that to her anyway. She might take me over the head or something.
Well, where would she find out things like that?
I don't know. But you see, I'm working out around, you know, and that's where I run into that, like that. But you go by any of these high schools today and see the automobiles that's parked there.
Oh.
You go by that North Marion school over there, and there's over 200 automobiles. And I ain't kidding you. And probably 25 or 30, maybe 50 motorcycles.
Yeah.
The kids riding in there to school should be riding the school bus.
Yes. Yes. Got no reason to.
They got no reason to have a car there.
How about that? I hadn't thought about that. No. I'll ask Willie about that. He used to drive a school bus a whole lot, you know. Willie Chitty. You don't know him. You know Willie.
That fellow that was here Saturday?
No, that's Cookie.
That's Cookie, huh? Yeah. Yeah, they got all fancy names.
Yeah.
You said the wrong thing about that boat that you made the ribs for.
I see that.
Yes, sir. That's the last thing he said when he left here. That he was going out and look up a good piece of oak lumber. I said to him, "Now, what would that involve, Cookie?" And he knew a lot more about it than I had realized. You got to boil that stuff?
Bend it.
How you bend it?
Well, you got to have it longer than what you want it, see?
Yeah.
And you take your arch, whatever you want, and you take and cut a piece that just what you want.
Yeah.
You put a clip down on the bottom of it, see, and you take and boil that and stick it. Put it right down in there like that, and bring it right over here like that, and hold it right down. See, you put something over it to hold it right down there like that, and let it dry. And when it dries, it's right there, and the devil can't straighten it out unless you do boil it.
Oh.
Now, say that again. I didn't follow that at all.
You take and get your form,
yeah,
whatever you want, like that, see?
Yeah.
And it would come straight down here. When we used to take a piece of metal, see, and have it come out here like that, and then over here, and then back here like that, and fastened on, so to hold it strong, see? Well, then you take this straight piece that's boiled, and you stick it right down in there,
yeah,
and pull it right over this,
yeah,
whatever you want, right down there to where you want it. And then you have something here to fasten it with. Hold
now
it right there.
That's after it's already boiled.
Yeah, after it's boiled.
See, he boils that piece of oak, see, for an hour or two until it's leathery,
yeah,
all the way through.
Yeah. And put it right in there. Pull it right over here like that, see. Now, they take those fellies that goes right on them wheels. And on that's the reason they put them halfway, see. And you take and have a... They have a form that they take and stick that right in like that, see. And then they bend that right over there. Let me get this right side up. And they come right around more than halfway here, see?
Yeah.
And then they fasten it. Of course, they could bring it right around, you know, like that, right around there, and then take and put something right over the end of both of them to hold them right there.
Yeah.
Well, then after that is cold, and that's around there like that, well, then they take and saw it off just wherever they want it, see? And they've got their half of a circle.
Yeah.
Well, then if they make two, well, they take and put them together just like that, and they've got the whole thing. You put your spokes, you take them and have your spokes in your hub, you know, and you take and get them around, and you take and work them around onto here and drive them on, see? And then when you get them drove on, then your tire that goes on the outside, did you ever see them set a tire?
No.
They take that iron tire, I've helped them set lots of them.
He did?
Huh? And you take and put it, and they take this hemlock bark. They used to buy it purpose, come right in sheets. And they'd take and start a fire right around it and set that right up to go over your, same as your rim come around here like that, see, and you set the bark up on both sides of it. Right straight around, see, and take a little gasoline and pour right on there, start a good hot fire right around there, and that bark will take and heat that tire right up, you know, and it'll expand, see.
Yeah.
All right, when you get just about expanded just about so much, you have your wheels laying here on a piece of cement with a hole here for your hub to go down in, and your fellow will set right around on this flat cement like that, see? All right. Then you have these irons that you snap right down onto that tire, see? And when you pick up on it, your irons grabs right onto it, see? And it takes two men to do it. You pick it right up and carry it right over there and just take and lay it right down on top of that wood and let it right down on there. See? And then just take and put a little bit of water onto it and it shrinks it right on there.
Cools it and shrinks it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got it working both ways then. That iron rim will cool off and shrink.
Yeah.
And then that other stuff will dry out and
shrinks it right on there.
And stretch.
Yeah.
Can you buy those fellas already made?
They used to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you bought one ready made, what would you do?
Well, if you're taking by the fella ready made, then you've got to take and put it next to your wheel here and see how much you'd got to have there, see?
Oh, it's still got a little play in it.
Yeah, it's got a little play. It comes, and they'd be probably 2-3 inches too long for you to saw off.
Oh, yeah.
See? You take and get your circle of what you want right there, and then you take and count the number of spokes you got and figure out just where you want to bore your hole for that spoke to go in.
Yeah.
See? Up to your shank. Well, then you take and get that on there, and then you take and and put it on there, and you generally have to tunk them spokes one way or the other, see, to get them started in the hole. And keep it going right around, and you drive them right on.
Yeah, well, that's pretty, takes a pretty good craftsman to do all that.
Well, then you see, you're taking by that wagon tire, comes right in a flat piece, if you're going to buy them, if you're going to put a new one on. Well, then they have a wheel with a marker on it. See, and the wheel is generally about that big around. See, so if, I think that it used to measure about 3 feet when it went around once. See,
yeah.
Well, they had a marker on it right there, and he'd take a start right there, you know, and come right around your felly, see, and go right straight around, so to find out how far it was around the outside. And when he come around, he'd have a piece of that chalk, you know, and he'd take a marker down there. See, you know, he'd been around same as 3 times, and then the difference between them 2 pieces of chalk marks. Then he'd take his piece of iron and come right along on it and come right over to where that is, and then they'd take and cut it right off, see, right there. Well, then he had the length, see. Well, then they'd take and put that right in the fire, you know, and heat it and keep heating it, and as you take and heat it, you take and tunk it with a hammer and make it round, come right up around, and then when you get around there, so if you come around to the end like that, and they take and heat them 2 ends, you know, and just lap them over just a little bit, put a little welding compound on there, and heat them to a welding heat, and pound it right together, see? Well, that'd weld right in there so that you couldn't get it apart. That's the way they put them on.
Yeah. But that's got to be pretty hot. So you can...
Oh, it's got to have a welding heat on it.
Sure.
Yeah. You've been in a blacksmith shop and see them weld, didn't you?
No.
Didn't you ever see them pound iron together and weld it?
No. Let me tell you, Mr. Eastman, the only thing I remember in a blacksmith shop was when they were making those shoes.
Horseshoes?
Yes. Or shaping them, you know. Well, they'd have them on a cone.
That's just the same way. You take your corks, your toe corks are welded onto the horseshoe just the same as welding that wagon tire together. And then your back and your heel corks on there are just bent. They just heat them up and bend them, you know.
Yeah. But the toe corks are welded?
Yeah.
Well, I thought they were bent too.
The old toe corks, you know, used to come and there'd be a chunk just about that long, see?
Yeah.
And then they'd have one little bit of a sharp point to stuck down on it,
yeah.
See? So that what you could do, you take and put that shoe in the fire, see, and get it red hot.
Yeah.
Well, then you take it on your anvil there and you take this cork and put on there and get it just where you wanted it and then hit it. And where that point was there, that'd go down in that red hot iron, see, and hold it there. Well, then you put it back in the fire and get a welding heat onto it and take and pound that cork right into it there, see, and it'll weld right in.
Well, now this stuff you do now is all child's play compared to all that, ain't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You just errand boy. You just go over there and...
Mm-hmm. Well, I worked in the blacksmith shop a little bit. They had an old blacksmith up there and... He's a comical old fellow. I was in there one day helping him some, you know. And you know what a monkey wrench is.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they got a square end on them on there, you know. And I always supposed that was for using for a hammer, you know.
Yeah.
So, I drilled a hole through the tire, you know, and put a bolt down through it. And it didn't just fit just right there. And then I took the wrench, you know, and started to pound it. Old fellow, hey! Don't use that for a hammer. We got hammers for that. He says, that's a wrench.
Well, they must. I always use them for a hammer.
Did he give me the old Harry for that?
Yes. Now I don't believe you could do that fella now on that wheel. You don't have anything to work with down there.
I don't know how he couldn't heat it.
And you haven't got nobody, you don't know where there is a place.
No, I don't. But this old blacksmith I used to work for, he used to make a lot of wagons, too. And he made a nice road wagon for a fellow.
Hey, turn off that fan. I'm not in there.
The fellow said, now he said, I want to see that wagon just before it's painted. You get it all ready to paint, and then he said, you let me know and I want to see it. So he got it ready, and he let him know that it was all ready to paint. And he came down and he looked at it, and he says, you know, the old fella, he'd been over it there, and he'd sanded it all down, and if there was any spot in it that had a crease in it or a little hole or anything, he put putty into it, you know.
Yeah.
And it was where it was screwed together with wood screws. He had putty on them and one thing and another there. The fellow looked the wagon over and he said, what do you got all the putty on there for? Well, old Peter Van Slyke, his name was. Pete said, well, that makes them stronger. By God, he says, you sell that wagon to somebody else and make me one out of all putty. I was just a young lad, you know. Indeed, I never forgot that.
I think somebody ought to maintain an old blacksmith shop. Don't you think they'd get some business?
I don't know. I presume probably they would. You know, that's one thing that I've always wanted to own all my life is a forge.
Yeah. Yeah.
My niece, I never had.
Never have?
No. I got a, my next younger brother was a horseshoer. God, he had a forge right on the back of his truck, and he went around shoeing horses.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now you see, it wouldn't pay you to have that old charcoal fire anymore. You'd have to have an electric, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they stand there, you know, the old bellows, you know, and pull it up and down to blow the fire.
Yeah. You know, Mr. Eason, I was thinking yesterday when you went up here yesterday when we brought the hay up. Cookie had that little old pickup truck, and it was a right sturdy truck, big, new tires, and pretty heavy. He had 40 bales, pretty good sized bales, on that truck. And it looked like it was overloaded. But you know what? It's got so, at one time I may have had a little feeling for that, but I've lost it. I don't have a feeling for the weight. But now when you're driving wagons or trucks, light trucks, you could feel what you had on that, couldn't you?
Yeah.
And you didn't have to look at it. You could just feel it the way the truck goes.
You feel the way it handles when you drive it.
Yeah.
I had a ton and a half Chevy truck on the farm. And we used to draw a pile of baled hay and load in cars, you know, to ship it to New York and different places.
Yeah.
Well, we used to put on... after they got baling in the lots, you know, with them hay balers there, we put on 120 bales.
Big bales.
Well, they were pretty good size.
Yeah. Everything was bigger then because, you know, a man could pick it up now. 5 pounds, good size.
Well, you know, when I was a young lad, they used to bale that hay with a team of horses and a sweep. You ever see one of them?
I've heard the name. I can't quite place it.
Well, horses went right around on this sweep, see?
Yeah.
And it wound this cable up.
Yeah.
And the cable run from this sweep to the hay baler.
Yeah.
And the hay baler had this arm under here, you see? And it pulled this up like that, and when it pushed up, your hay was in a big box, a big wooden box, and they'd put the hay in the top and jump it down. Two men would take and jump on it, you know, see, and punch the hay down in there,
oh,
and keep a filling it right up, you know. And when they got it filled up, they put this lock over the top.
Yeah.
All right, when they got this lock over the top and they start the horses up, that cable would draw this arm up, you know.
Yeah.
And it'd come right up in there and it'd push that right up in there, see?
Yeah.
Well, when they got it pushed up in there, then they'd put these wires around it, you know, to hold it.
Yeah.
Geez, you know, a lot of them damn bales would weigh 350, 400 pounds.
I never saw anything like that.
By Jesus, I'm telling you, take two men, wiggle like hell to handle that stuff.
Well, now let me tell you, why didn't I see some of that?
I don't know. And then they just taken.
How come you to see it?
When they got these, when they got that bale, the wires on the bale, you know.
Yeah.
They had a lever there, they'd push that lever, and that'd release the, catch on the on that sweep out there, you know, and then let it all let that cable back, see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then when they took their foot off from that lever, well, that dog on there would catch again, see. When the horses went around, that dog would catch again, see.
Mm-hmm.
And take and start right in and run another bale up.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
No, that's the only the first kind. The only the way we made hay for the longest time was just loose, Mister.
Loose, yeah.
And we had them needles that drop down, pick it up. We got that improvement.
Yeah.
And take it clear to the back of the barn.
Hay for it.
And you see, the barn. Well, right in there, all we did was feed it right out of that loft, wasn't it? So all you had to do was get a forkful and throw it down the
kettle.
Yeah. So it wasn't such a bad system. But I don't know. Now, you know, on this equipment, you reach a point where it just takes a rich man to operate it all,
yeah.
Don't it? It takes it clear out of the class of a poor man. Yeah. Now you see they're putting in all this irrigation now, and that just puts the poor man clear out of business, don't it? They put on these big wells,
yeah.
And all they use it for is irrigation. I presume it is. Of course, they can use that for pasture and for if they want to. And melons. Now, that's what they do, and that's big money. And you see, they ain't got time for the blacksmith.
No.
How'd you run across that wagon with a metal wheel?
Well, that is over there where we was putting that well in.
Why did they have metal wheels?
Well, they figured they wouldn't ride out.
Yeah. They weren't any easier on the horses.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that they was as easy on the horses as the big wheels there, because they used to have them big wheels, you know. Christ, some of them stand as high as that door,
yeah.
On there. Well, then when you come to put them little wheels on there about 2 feet high, why, they draw it a lot harder.
Yeah. You were talking out there yesterday when Cookie was working on them brads on that metal, that he had that old piece of wood block like you used to have.
Yeah.
What did you have in mind?
Well, you just take and laid your thing right on there, you know, and you could drive them rivets right down.
In
they
the
drive
box.
Down through the metal right into the block, see?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See,
yeah.
Your block would hold it there, so you drive your metal down there, your rivets down in
yeah,
there.
That's right. And then you could keep it in place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that worked for leather, too.
Yeah.
And then you turn them over and
yeah.
Brad them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
see? You take these split rivets, you take them and drive them down through leather like that, you know. You drive them into a piece of wood or something, then you take them and pull them up out. And so when you turn them over, then you take them and drive one line, one the other way, see, to clinch them.
And leather?
In the leather, yeah.
Yeah. Man, there's a lot of equipment that a fella could learn if he wanted to. Now, this fella you was talking about down at Miss Lois's, she didn't have him down there to fix the door.
Not necessarily. I think he was there to fix something else, and she asked him to fix the door, see?
Yeah.
And he said that it couldn't be fixed. Well, she says, can't you buy any of them parts? And he says, no. He says, every 7 years, they throw all the old parts away and discard them. He says, they figured that the life of the stove was 7 years, he says, and they just throw them away. And she said that... that she knew a fellow that would fix that. Well, he said, you get him then.
He didn't want to be bothered, so yeah. I asked him this evening why it wouldn't take him much of his time. What'd you do? Just,
Well, I had that spring, you know, seeing they were like that on it about that long, and it wasn't so stiff as that, you know, it was limber, see?
Yeah.
And this is broke off, so I took and uncoiled us a little bit right around here and bent it over again, see, to make another loop on the other end.
Yeah.
Well, then I took some of this number 10 wire, where I wound that up in a ring and I had out there monkeying a pair of pliers. And I made just a little loop like that on one end, and I got it down through the door frame on the stove and it was on that further corner.
Yeah.
Got it down through the door frame there, and it come out down there about halfway on the broiler, see?
Uh-huh.
I pulled that down through there, and I pulled it down with a pair of pliers just as tight as I could pull it, and then bent it back up quick. Well, then I took and cut it off, you know, and bent that right up tight to the stove. These are goddamn open doors. Just as nice as could be. She says, there, I told that fella that I could get that fixed.
But if he went around fixing people's stuff like that, he wouldn't sell any new equipment.
No, that's true.
Oh.
What we were saying out there, see?
I see.
I wish we could talk some. Do you know anybody down there at Marion Hardware?
No.
You ever go down there?
Every time that I get something down to Marion Hardware, I get hooked.
What's the matter?
Well, I don't know. One thing, I bought a fire pot down there, you know, to melt lead and one thing and another.
Yeah.
And I'd had it about a year, and it plugged up. And so I called them up, see if I could get a repair part for it. No, they didn't have any. They didn't keep no repairs for them. All they dealt in is the new stove. They didn't have no repair parts. So I wrote to the company that makes them. The company that makes them there said that they hadn't made that stove in 10 years. And they didn't have any repair parts for it, the company that made it. See? Well, now they've got a dozen or so of them stoves down there, and what they going to do? They're going to peddle them onto somebody, and somebody can't get any repair parts for them.
Yeah.
See, just the same as I was.
Yeah. I went down to see one of those kerosene heaters on there where Aaron Miller works at that Shell place. And they had the summer prices on. It'd been a good time to buy one. And he started out with a little round one like that one in that front room there where Faye is.
Yeah.
For $60. But he didn't want to sell me that. He said it didn't make enough heat.
Yeah.
Well, Miss Eastman, I found out that little old heater over there in the trailer. Of course, the trailer is small and it's sealed.
Yeah.
I turned that up just as low as it goes. Is as much heat as I ever turned that up.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. In cold weather, just leave it as low as it goes.
Yeah.
But it seemed like over here I got to have one of these 40,000 BTU heaters or something like that. You see, I don't heat the whole house.
Yeah.
I just heat this room. I can't heat that room unless I put a vent or something on it. I don't want to heat it much, you see. I just work in there. I don't sit down. But they've got those nice things. Oh, I forget what some of them look like, Faye. They are.
They got some of the big ones with blowers on them.
Blowers, yeah.
Did you heat your house here?
Yeah, you heat your house
here. It's one of my own things.
You know, I think it's like air conditioning. What you need to do with your heat is just have it outside there somewhere. You can get to it with a thermostat on it and have vents going mm-hmm. where you want it.
Well, up home, you know, we always put them in the cellar, see, and then your pipes come underneath, and you put your hot air pipes in the center of the house,
yeah.
and your cold air pipes on the outside.
Yeah.
Well, you know, down here they do just the opposite. See?
Yeah.
And down here, and they run up and come over the ceiling. Now, if they was gonna put it in here, they'd take and put a damn cold, a hot air pipe right up there.
Yeah.
See? Well, geez, you put a hot air pipe up there, and you come down and mix it right with your cold air, and cools it off, or it heats up anything.
Yeah.
Or if your hot air come in the middle, could stay hot till it got over here somewhere, see, till it started mixing with it. But up here, you mix it right in, right in the beginning.
Yeah. And then you do it at the top, and that's where the hot air goes in.
Yeah. But if you're coming under the bottom and come up in the middle of your house, your air circulates over like that and come down, and you put a cold air over here to go back into your furnace, see, to heat over again.
Yeah. I tell you what, a fella just got to put his mind to it, Mr. Eastman, see about it, or else, no doubt, what he'll buy.
Well, I got a fella down there at Orange Lake now. He's got a trailer and cabana on it, and he's been trying to heat the cabana with the furnace and the stove and the trailer part, see? Well, it just won't heat it. It just won't do. And now, they're coming out with the trailers now, where they set a stove in there, you know, and they've got a heat pipe that goes right down, and your heat pipe goes under the floor.
Oh.
And there's a blower on it, see, that blows that heat down through and under the floor, and then it comes up.
Well, now, I could use that same thing, couldn't I?
Yeah. But what I'm trying to get for this fella down there is a regular oil furnace that we can set right outdoor, see? Set right down so that when you blow your hot air, it comes right straight through. It don't have to go back down, see?
Yeah.
Because every time that you cut an elbow with the air, you cut off your heat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you cut off about 25% of your heat every time that you put an elbow on.
Well, I'll be darned. Is that right? What does it do? It just stops it.
Well, it hits against the side there, they claim, and it's got a resistance there.
Yeah. Huh.
And if you can get a good sort of a sweep on it, they don't cut it down near as much as it does one of them short turns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See? Now, where is that you're trying to do that? Down that Arnie Lake?
Yeah.
Down at
well, we're trying to find a furnace, see, to set right out there. Well, I want to get one for my own place, see.
Oh, really?
Set right just under the house right there.
Yeah.
And then you take and run heat pipes off of it to every room, see.
Yeah.
And then you take a cold air off in there and run back to your furnace to run back through it. That's the way that I always done up north, God, I put in probably over 100 of them up there.
Well, they're coal, aren't they?
Well, we used to put in coal, and then we put in oil conversion units to put into them coal furnaces, and then some of them we took the coal furnaces out and put a regular oil furnace in.
Well, I'm going to watch you and see what you find.
You see, your regular coal furnaces are most all of them made of cast iron fire pot and that.
Yeah.
Well, you take your oil furnaces, they're made of that sheet iron or stainless steel.
Yeah.
See, and that heats quicker and it cools off quicker.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now, yes. But now they'd have a whole lot lighter equipment to work with.
Yeah. And I have put in some of them coal furnaces that was made out of that sheet metal and had the fire bricks set right around the fire pot, see?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we used to, when we first started putting in the oil burners, we put them in them cast iron furnaces. We had to make a fire pot out of that fire brick there for your oil burner to blow into.
What did you use for fans?
For fans? Well, we bought a regular fan right for the furnace.
Yeah. Just like these electric fans?
Well, a good deal like them. No. The squirrel cage. You know what a squirrel cage fan is? Just like this here and running that right around. It's got all these louvers in here. See, and it's open on the end here. And it sucks your air right in here and blows it out through these louvers.
Oh. How much cleaning do you have to do?
Huh?
How much do you have to clean it?
Well, we used to take them, if you cleaned them in the fall or in the summer,
yeah,
then you'd have them so they'd be all in good shape for winter.
Yeah.
And we used to take the oil burners and clean the oil burners up and put a new nozzle on the oil burner and new filters in the oil line. New filters in the cold air line to your furnace, and then it should be all set. And you take and clean them up like that and do a good job on them, and they'd run all winter. See, and you wouldn't have any service calls on them.
Yeah. Well, now these fans, those propellers, you know, they get all grimy.
Yes. Well, we used to take a little kerosene or gasoline on a rag and just take them. Wipe them right off and clean them off.
Yeah.
If they were too bad, sometimes you just have to take a wire brush and run
in. Yeah, yeah. But they have to have some cleaning.
Yeah.
They get a little oil on there, and that's one thing that makes it
stick. Yeah,
it
makes it
stick,
yeah.
Do you hear what I hear?
What's that?
Very light.
Huh?
Very light sprinkle out there.
Oh, yeah?
Very light.
What y'all gonna do about that?
See, I was just thinking, I don't know that a telephone would help on that. I think we better, I don't know just what to do.
What do you think, Miss Eastman?
What about that
better
pump?
Better do about that pump.
Yeah.
Jesus, it seems to be pumping water all right.
Slow.
Well, it's a little bit slow, but...
It takes so long to get it back. I don't believe you can have much of a leak in that because it's too much pressure. Just a little leak would just about cut it off.
Yeah.
Would it still work with a little leak in it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it would.
It could be down at the bottom of the well.
It might be in the check valve down there too, you know.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, if you put a new pump on there, you want to pull that old pipe out.
Yeah.
And put new in there.
Yeah,
because I've seen them when they didn't do that. They thought, oh, that old pipe is all right. And the next thing they knew, they had just as much trouble as they had before.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the other way around, you might put some new pipe and see if the old... the old equipment don't pay.
Well, Miss Eastman, it looks as if it works all right, doesn't it?
Huh?
It looks as if it works all right.
Well, the pump was pumping, but it was a little bit slow, but...
And it must get slower.
You know, on the other hand, it may be that the water table under there is down enough so that the reason that you ain't getting as much water.
That's right.
It's the same as this one.
The same depth, huh?
The same, the whole thing's the same. Well, it was when I used to go down into it. It's about 60 foot down there, and the water is about 30 foot down.
Yeah.
Now, that's the way it used to be, and both of them the same. Of course, they could change.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they weren't deep wells for it at all, by any means.
Was you ever around one of these hand-dug wells down where they had them stoned up?
No.
And had a pump on the top of them?
No.
They have them, heck, a lot of them up north there.
How big would they be?
Well, they'd dig a hole down about 5 or 6 feet across.
Yeah.
See, well, then when they got down and hit water, then they'd lower a stone down in, you know, and lay the stone right around, see?
Yeah.
And by laying the stone around there, and you lay the big edge out and the small edge in, see, that wedged them in all the while, see? And they'd take and start and come up with the stone, you know, and then fill in back of it with dirt as they come along up. Well, I was down in one of them wells. We used to have to go down and clean them, you know.
Oh.
See, and where they had, they used to have them water logs that went down in there, you know. They'd be 4 inches square, and then they had a 2-inch hole in the middle of it, or an inch and a half, and a chain went down around the outside, you know, and come up, and it had, ever so far, it had a rubber on it. And that rubber would come up through that log, you know, and it'd suck that water right up through, see?
Oh.
And then they had a spout on the top up there, you know, so when the water come up, it'd just come right out the spout.
Yeah.
Well, I used to go down and clean them every so often. Well, I was down in one, well, I was down about 30 feet down in there, and the fellow dropped a quarter-inch stove bolt nut. You know how big they'd be. Down and that thing hit me on the top of the head, and by Jesus, it put me right on my knees. I thought he'd dropped a baseball or something down there.
Well, I'll be done.
You know, and that's the...
Now, that's the nut, not the bolt.
You know what? It's just the nut.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to show you what a bullet will do when it hits you on the head, see? But that was just dropped, just the weight of it, the velocity of it there, just hit me on the head, see?
Yeah.
Well, if that had dropped far enough, if that had dropped from 1,000 feet, it went right through a fellow's head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How deep was that, 50 foot, maybe?
I was down there about 30 feet.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You just go down and you got water on that.
Yeah, well, if the well went down and got dried up, you know, and one thing and another, you'd have to go down and they'd take a rope with a pail, see, and let the rope down, and you go down in there and you take a little short-handled fire shovel or something, you know, and clean the dirt and all the debris, the old stuff is down in there, and clean it all out clean, and then they'd draw it up, see.
Yeah.
And then if they had a part of a pail of water and they got up part way, they hit a stone and splashed it over, and Jesus, come down all over the top of you, you know. Most of it would be colder than blazes.
Yeah. Now, Faye, I can't understand that Mr. Eastman got into all that, and I never even got close to it.
That's right.
And he lived in a part of the country that's more progressive than where I live.
Well, you take it, it's like old man, I can't think of his name now. But I was putting a new kitchen floor in down there, see, and crawling around under there. And he said to me, "How old are you anyway?" Well, at that time, I was 62. Well, golly, he said, "You're 10 years older than I am." He said, "I can't crawl around like that." Well, I said, "I'll tell you." McCoy, his name was. I said, Ray McCoy. I said, "Ray, I'll tell you what the difference is. You never had it to do," and I said, "That's what I've done all my life."
Mr. Eastman, let me ask you, how difficult is it to set in a tank and a commode?
Yeah.
How difficult
is
it?
Yeah, do you have to have a lot of tools and things?
Oh, not too many.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's not too much trouble, is it?
No. Not if everything works all right.
Not if everything works all right. Oh, shoot. He's going to fix my windows when he has a little time.
Yeah, well, I'll be running along. And I'll go out there and check on that pump again before I go.
All right.
See if I can get wet. With the rain, I mean.
Yeah, do that.
So this reel is full up. There's 10 to over, and the end of visit Mr. Eastman this Monday afternoon. He came up for the third or fourth time to check on that far pump. It just quit running. This Monday, the 7th of June, 1971. The end of the visit, Mr. Eastman in the kitchen of Fay. This Monday afternoon, the 7th of June, 1971. And I'm just, this is a beautiful thing. He has so much in there. And part of it is just good old reporting, and he was in no hurry. Channel 2 over, and the end of this visit with Mr. Eastman this Monday afternoon, the 7th of June, 1971.